a Honda monkey.
Yeah. Well, today on the podcast, we have one Wilco Van Poelgeest.
Kinda. We can let him say his own name.
Yeah, say your name.
Wilco Van Poelgeest.
Yeah, our Walmart German.
Walmart German.
Walmart German.
It's not a Walmart German.
Aaron is MIA at the moment, so
like for real. If you've seen him, please let us know.
If you know anything about where Aaron is, please hit us up because
you can email us at limitedtoeverything@gmail.com if you have seen Aaron.
Good plug. So filling in for Aaron today is Wilco Van Poelgeest, whatever he said. He's Dutch.
Yeah.
Yep. That's about it. So, anything you want to say about yourself, Wilco? This is your chance.
Anything?
The world is your...
Is there anything that people should know about you? Anything that they shouldn't know about you that you're going to tell them anyway?
No, I don't think so.
He's a very interesting person.
Yeah.
He's nervous. He's microphone nervous.
Yeah, microphone nervous.
Is it your first time on the microphone, Wilco?
Well, except for calling, yeah.
Wow, you've used a cell phone before. Whoop-de-doo. Okay.
We're glad to hear that you guys have like modern technology in the Netherlands. Yeah. We know you guys are a little behind sometimes.
Okay.
So, kind of tend to do things the cheap way.
Okay. Today we're going to be talking about a certain, you know, which Mission Impossible is this?
The sixth one.
Yeah, six.
Fallout, right?
Yeah, Fallout.
Because all I can think was like Fallout 64 the whole time. Every time I saw the title.
Oh. Why?
It's just when I think Fallout, that's what it makes me think of.
I guess that's fair.
If I think of Fallout, I think of like the video game. But
yeah,
that's what I said.
Oh,
yeah.
It's late.
It's super late. What time is it? Is it 1 yet?
It's about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's early. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Bright and early Saturday morning.
Anyways,
greetings and salutations.
We're gonna have a good chat about Mission Impossible 6, starring Tom Cruise. And directed by
J.J. Abrams, right?
No, produced by J.J. Abrams.
We'll figure that out, but right now, here's the theme song.
Yeah, just hold on to your hats. I'm Nate.
I'm Karina.
And I'm Wilco.
Wow, good job. Did you tell me I was going to have to do that?
No, and this is limited to everything.
Yeah, you're smarter than you look.
German engineering.
That's why it is not working correctly.
I think that's user error.
We have a saying in the Netherlands though.
About
so a German throws a grenade to the Dutch guy. What do you think the Dutch guy does?
Catches it?
Yeah, it pulls the pin out and throws it back.
So it's basically pull-up jokes. But
no, we mostly say it about the Belgians, but I want to make them.
Every culture has the same jokes. They just use it. Just use a nationality they don't like. Because that's a joke.
The most recent one the most recent one they went to war with, or somebody that they have like cultural differences. Polacks? People from
Poland.
Well, Polak is like a derogatory term. Yeah. They're just the Poles.
Wait, you guys don't like Polak?
We are Polish.
We are Polish.
You guys are Polish?
Uh-huh.
Decently. Yeah.
Oh. My grandpa's like 100% Polish.
So this is Mission Impossible Fallout, starring Tom Cruise, Henry Cavill, Rebecca Ferguson, who, no offense to her, but was way more attractive in the movie than on her IMDb photo, Simon Pegg, and I don't know, I guess other notable names would be Alec Baldwin for sure. I guess Ving Rhames is probably a good to mention, and then I suppose Vanessa Kirby as well, and then some other people.
Who's the one with the big nose?
That's Ving Rhames. Also known as Luther. Who's in like... You at least remember Luther from the other ones, right? Oh, come on. Okay, how many of these movies have you seen?
From Mission Impossible?
Yeah.
Christopher McQuarrie.
I think.
Oh, directed by Christopher McQuarrie. Thank you, Karina.
Oh, he said, my man, in Jamaican. Yeah.
Well, I've seen all of them. You said you didn't see five?
I haven't seen the fifth one. I'm not sure how that happened.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But to me, four and five are the same. Like, I cannot tell them apart. I think I watched them back to back, so that didn't help.
I think the only two that stand out to me really are the first two, because the first one obviously is, like, the first one, so it's special. Then the second one stands out because of how absurd it is, and hopefully we'll get to that one some other time with Aaron.
We'll get to that one sometime. We will do that one. The third one also stands out to me because that one's very Asian, and that's what I remember about it for the most part. And then four and five are, like, the same, as far as I can remember. I mean, Jeremy Renner is in both of them.
Which
he's
is
not
odd.
In any of the other movies, so that doesn't help at all. It's not like he's in one of them, so I can remember the ones with Jeremy Renner are four, other ones with Jeremy Renner are five. He's in both of them, and then he's not in six. Whatever.
But we're not complaining about that.
Yeah, I'm not a big Jeremy Renner fan, honestly. I can't actually think of a single movie I've seen him in that I liked. I mean, The Avengers was good, but not because of him.
But he doesn't play a very central role in that either.
Well, he's an Avenger.
Yeah, but he's not one of the main ones. He's like a supporting Avenger.
I mean, I think he's a main character still. So
he's a main character.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Karina, give us a rundown on the Fallout 6 plot, as much as you can remember.
As much as I can remember?
Fallout 6. I mean, Mission Impossible 6, Fallout.
Do you want like a one-paragraph synopsis?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Not your Hellboy synopsis, quote-unquote, that started with camera angles of the first scene.
Okay. So Ethan Hunt is supposed to intercept or like fake a deal to get, what is it, uranium? Plutonium. From these people that are selling it, because they're trying to prevent it from getting into the hands of a terrorist cell that's been growing.
It's the Apostles.
Yeah, the Apostles. Remind me what the guy's name is.
Solomon Lang,
who's
but
been in.
They don't know that he's part of it.
Yeah, I'm not. Well, you didn't want me to go through that specifically. So Solomon Lang is the head of this terrorist group called the Apostles. Their plan is to build these weapons. They need the plutonium for them, so they're trying to intercept it. But it goes wrong. The plutonium ends up in the hands of the wrong people. And so then Ethan Hunt is sent back to make sure that the people that have the weapons and the scientists and all that don't end up with the plutonium. But he works for whatever it is, IMF. Is that what it is? MIF? What is? I don't remember the name of his department. It's not a fake one, and whatever he works for. And then the CIA also gets involved, and they send their own agent along, which is Henry Cavill, who I think you forgot to mention when you were listing. Did you?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. And so then basically the two of them are trying to hunt this down and intercept deals and all of that. And then turns out that Henry Cavill is actually working for, he's one of the Apostles, and he's been working to try and sabotage the mission the entire time and frame Ethan Hunt as being one of the agents instead. And it all culminates in Kashmir, and there's an epic helicopter scene, and they defuse some bombs, and
it's your usual spy Garbo. So I want to talk about something, because this is a podcast. Because what exactly is the point of Solomon Lane? Like, what's the goal besides just, you know, killing people?
Oh, like his objective?
Yeah, sure. Like, do we ever really get that?
They made him sound like he was like a religious fanatic.
Okay. Yes. Like the manifesto thing that they like repeat a bunch, like, you know, you have to sacrifice a lot to...
The greater the sacrifice, the greater the peace or something.
Yeah, something like that. But like, what exactly is, you know, just blowing up places, accomplishing and killing people?
Well, he was trying to bring people together by attacking, or that's what I got out of it, is that he was trying to bring people that wouldn't normally be on the same side together. Like when they fake the one scene with the scientist, and they say that they bombed like the three, the Mecca, the Vatican, and Jerusalem. That it would bring the three like major world religions together because they would all have been attacked at the same time, and so then they would have to work together instead of working against each other. So that was kind of the end goal, I think, is that by attacking a bunch of people, they force the human race to kind of have to work together to achieve peace instead of fighting each other.
Wait. Who was the one in the hospital bed when they showed
that? That was the scientist that they needed.
Okay.
For the plutonium. Noel Brunwick or whatever
his name is. Neil Brunwick. Something.
But Solomon Lang, as a person, does he actually care about any of that, do we think? Or is he just like a sociopath that wants to kill people and create mayhem? Because, yeah. I mean, just blowing up places doesn't seem like a logical way to reach a goal of peace, regardless of
it does how seem backwards. Nicely
it's worded in your manifesto. I don't really see how that accomplishes that goal. I think he just has a bloodlust. And I don't remember him very well from the other movies, so I don't... I mean, obviously, Ethan Hunt hates him a lot and, like, detests him for being, like, a terrible human. So obviously he's just kind of a bad person. I don't think he believes in the manifesto at all.
Probably so, not.
I thought the manifesto was kind of pointless, really. Like,
well, it was only really important to the scientist.
Yeah, but they kept repeating it later in the movie.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. Oh. At least once. Like when Henry Cavill, what's his name in the movie? Walker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When he like thinks that Simon Pegg is Solomon Lang. Simon Pegg, what's Simon Pegg's name? The funny guy. What's his name in the movie?
What is his name? I should know this. Simon. Hang on.
Oh my goodness. Rudy? Is it Rudy?
Is it the one that always wears the mask?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Thanks, welcome.
Glad you're on.
Benji.
Benji, that's right. When Walker is talking to Benji, when he thinks Benji is Solomon, then they go through that whole, like, stupid stuff about the manifesto again there. So they keep bringing it back up like it's supposed to be important, but it's really not. They just want to kill people, I think is all it comes down to. So, I don't know. I thought that was kind of stupid. I didn't think they needed to involve that. Like, the main bad guy can just be a sociopath, and that's fine. He can just be a sociopath that wants to kill people. Sure, why not? It doesn't have to be a religious, cultish type of movement. Especially if you're not really going to dwell on that very much, or make it important.
Mm-hmm. Although, I was happy to see that they really only made it about that for the scene that they fake with the doctor. And then, after that, it's not really an important part of the film.
Yeah.
Like, they just use it to get to him because they know that that's what he wanted to see out of it. And then that's what's going to make him happy and open him up to talking to them. So I was happy that it wasn't something that then they continued to drag throughout the rest of the film because it really wouldn't have fit with the rest of the narrative.
I do want to complain before we get into the other stuff about the movie. I want to complain about the title sequence because this is the first time I've ever seen this in a title sequence, but... You know, after the opening scene, and then it goes into all the credits, opening credits. It's playing clips from the movie in the opening credits. Like,
yeah.
Things that are going to happen in the movie are just playing in the title sequence. Which to me is really, really annoying. Like, to me as a person that doesn't even really like to watch a trailer before they watch a movie. It was really annoying to me to, like, for it to be, like, basically spoiling the movie in the movie. Like, I really didn't like that, so...
I also thought it was weird that they did it felt like they did this in the titles the same way at the beginning and the end with the cast.
Yeah.
Where
In the beginning they had also like the little, if you have fireworks, there's like the little green thing.
Fuse.
The fuse that goes really long and then you see the things where you were talking about.
Oh,
so the fuse goes
the images and stuff.
Yeah, and then and they did that too.
I think every Mission Impossible movie has done that.
They do it that way in all of them. I just thought it was weird that they did the cast the same way, like at the beginning and at the end, with like showing showing clips of them as you like.
Oh yeah,
it was really it was kind of weird.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't think about that. I mean, I thought about it at the end, but not at the beginning, because at the beginning I was just angry about the clips. I wasn't reading the names, so. What was something you like did not like about this movie? Do you have any complaints?
The last the last 15 minutes of the waiting thing that took 4 hours. That when they were fighting over or finding the next bomb and the remote control thing, that took forever.
Yeah, if you think about all that happens, like, he starts that timer when Walker, like, when Walker's getting into the helicopter, that's when he starts that 15-minute timer.
Yeah.
How much of the film goes by during that? We should have timed it.
Even if you don't even take it, think about it like that, like, non-diegetically, just think about, like, everything that happens in supposedly 15 minutes with the helicopters.
Yeah.
They have a massive, like, dogfight in these helicopters, and then they have, like, a fight on the mountain in the helicopters, and then they get out of the helicopters and fight more.
And then there's, like, 5 minutes over, and then they still have 10 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And then I fight a little bit on the mountain, and then that took, like, 7 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and then you had all the stuff that was happening back at the medical camp, so, you know, they're working on defusing the one bomb, and then they go into the hut, and they're fighting Lang in there, and, like, she's tied up for we don't know how long because Benji's still trying to go find
Elsa. She gets knocked out, but she has to come back too in like 30 seconds or something in order for everything to work. Like, she couldn't have been knocked out for a long time because it was within the 15 minute period.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, that whole sequence. Like, I get that, you know, when you're filming something, you have to, you know, if you have something that's a timer in a film and you have multiple things going on, you do have to take a little bit more time usually than what's actually given for the time, because you have to show those different things. But this was like at least twice as long as what the time that was allotted on the
maybe,
it was at least a half an hour. I bet you it was
less than 25, I'd say. But let's
not, okay,
well, he had to claim the mountain in like less than 50 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's Ethan Hunt.
Yeah,
but more importantly, he's Tom Cruise. So I'm pretty sure, I don't remember exactly, but I'm almost 100% positive that the helicopter thing was all Tom Cruise actually doing that. Not the fighting and stuff, not the dog fighting, but him climbing up the rope and everything. He actually did all that
stuff. Is he one of those guys that does his own stunts?
Yeah, and that's why the camera angles are so weird in that part of the movie, is because it's actually just like, camera's attached to the helicopter while he's climbing up the helicopter. Mm. And then it becomes more theatrical. It's more theatrical before and after that, but while he's climbing up it, like, it's actually him doing that on the helicopter. Like 90% sure.
I'm quite sure when he when they were filming that he jumped from one building to the other one, and then he almost slipped off. He broke his leg in one of those.
Really?
Yeah. Or something like that.
He's hardcore. You gotta like actors that are willing to do their own stuff like that.
Especially at his age, because he's in his 50s.
Oh, yeah.
He's not, like, young anymore.
Yeah, he's,
which, I mean, he looks great for his age, but...
He really does.
He can still get it.
Hair, I guarantee he dyes his
hair. I don't know.
Oh, come on.
I don't know. Mr. Barreto doesn't dye his hair.
Yeah, Mr. Barreto's also going gray.
Mr. Barreto just started going gray, and he's in his 60s.
Anyways, I can...
I digress.
Positive that Tom Cruise dyes his hair.
Maybe. Regardless, he doesn't look like he's in his 50s. Well, he does in some angles, I guess. But in some angles, he didn't.
When you really get a good look at his face, you can see the age in his face.
You can't, but even then, it really kind of depended on, like, what he was doing and, like, the angles. Yeah. Like, from some angles, you couldn't tell, and then from some, you could.
It was almost like when they wanted him to look old and tired and, like, haggard.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, there are definitely parts in this movie where you're supposed to get the feeling that he's, like, too old for this.
Yeah, for real. Why hasn't he retired yet?
And I am...
Not Tom Cruise, but, like, Ethan Hunt.
I'm very certain they're doing at least 2 more movies. I'm pretty sure. Like, it's contractually, how do you say it? Contractually. I'm pretty sure they're signed up to do 2 more Mission Impossible.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, assuming Tom Cruise doesn't die filming one of those, look forward to them.
Break his spine doing something.
Yeah. And they're a ways out, I think. I don't know how many. I mean, it's already been over a year since this one came out.
Yeah. I think my biggest problem with the film is just that there's so many cliches. Like, and maybe they're just cliches because they're doing what other Mission Impossible movies have done.
They created.
Maybe. But I just felt like there were so many, like, it's a very predictable movie. Like, you know exactly what's going to happen every single time. You know who are going to be the good guys, who's going to be the bad guys, who's going to help who out, who's going to make what decision in the end. You know all of it from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
So, I mean, and I get that it's probably just kind of catering to that audience of people that are like, we love Mission Impossible movies. There's a formula. We stick to it. But personally, just from the standpoint of like wanting a good action movie, not that it was a bad action movie, but it'd be nice to see them mix it up a little bit more.
Well, I think there's something to be said for not doing that, because if you look at like The Last Jedi, where they tried to mix it up and everyone hated them for it, like, it might be smarter just to stick with what you know people like what Marvel does. Marvel knows what people likes, and they just keep making it, and they keep making tons of money. So Mission Impossible, just keep making the same movie over and over again. People keep watching it. I'll keep watching it. They're entertaining. Yeah. They have good fight scenes. I mean, this one by far had the best fight scenes out of all of them, like hand-to-hand combat.
Oh, yeah.
The bathroom scene was awesome.
It was. I liked that.
That one was pretty good.
I also really liked the helicopter scene.
I did not like the mountain scene.
I liked parts of it.
It was filmed in like 2005.
I liked parts of it.
It was pretty cheesy.
Not so much for the special effects,
really,
but just
cheesy. It was super cheesy.
Not so much for the quality of like the film, just because it's like a unique thing to do.
Yeah,
you don't get a lot of helicopter like dogfights. That's not a common. That's not a like a movie trope.
That's true. And I guess we shouldn't be having an argument or a discussion even really about Mission Impossible being unrealistic, because I think that's kind of in its nature not to be realistic. But I mean, seriously, that helicopter was in like a spiral, like it was going down, and he just like gets in there and he's like able to ride it like right away.
Yeah,
like nobody can just get into a helicopter. The helicopter is like one of the most confusing machines ever. Like, you can't just hop into the pilot seat because you played like a flight simulator back in the day.
I felt like they made up for it a little bit later on in that scene, though, when he was trying to do something else and he couldn't like get the it under control for a little bit, that they did give him that moment later. Yeah. And that they gave those shocked reactions of all of his friends being like, wait, you can fly a helicopter? Yeah. This is clearly not normal, that nobody expected him to be able to just fly it. So yeah. I appreciated that, I guess, even though it was still unrealistic.
You saw like a big shot of the cliff that was there. You had the mountain and then like a little flat spot and then the cliff. And then the helicopters, they fell down. And then they got stuck in a cliff in there, but you clearly didn't see that little spot in the render before that one.
True. Yeah, it's like, oh, that's so convenient that there's this little cutout in the rock that's just the right size for the cabs of these helicopters to fall into. Weird.
A couple other problems are just like funny things throughout the movie. One of them was the one that we all noticed right away, which was when they get in the BMW. Not the noise.
Oh.
You can complain about that in a minute.
When they had him in the front seat.
Yeah, they put someone in the front seat. Like the captive with a black bag over his head. They put him in the front right where he is the most conspicuous. Obviously, as the movie, they did that so that like she could have him to shoot at later when they're driving around.
But realistically,
you put him in the trunk.
Yeah.
Or at least like, because he is important and you can't lose him, put him like in the middle seat, back seat, and then in the middle,
or just the trunk.
One of those two. I mean, the trunk, it makes less sense because
maybe escape out of it, maybe
he was all in a straight type jacket.
You never know, magicians or something like that. They can do tricks.
A magician just shows up, lets him out.
Lane, sociopath manslaughterer in his free time. No. Magician on the side. Yeah,
it's his night. Like, you know, he hasn't quit his day job because he's not great at it. It's his side hustle.
He just make himself look like Simon Pegg.
Although, okay, so the other thing I thought was just kind of funny about kind of leading up to that is that the whole like way that they were moving him. He's like the most wanted man on the planet, and that's a really conspicuous way to move somebody who's that wanted. Like, to have him in an armored vehicle with a police escort, that attracts a lot of attention. Yeah. And if somebody knew what was going on, it wouldn't be hard for somebody to figure out an ambush or something. Like, I'm just thinking, like, even from a, you know, not just in a Mission Impossible world, but in like the real world, that wouldn't be like a good way to move somebody like that. Like, you would want it to be very incognito. because if he's wanted by the government, you know, they make a big deal out of how, like, he can't fall into the wrong hands because he knows so much about MI6 and all this other stuff that, you know, he's the key piece in a deal that's going to, you know, barter for plutonium. He's wanted by all of these governments for questioning. You know, he's super familiar with MI6, and so they're concerned about him falling into the wrong hands, and they're just going to move him like he's, like, a bank deposit that they're moving between. I don't know. It was just...
So how do you transport somebody like that?
That's what I'm saying, is I bet you that you wouldn't ever know when they move people like that. Because they don't want... I mean, if they were going to move somebody who'd been in, like, Guantanamo Bay, I don't think they're going to, like, drive him in an armored, like, motorcade down the street. Because it's really obvious that that's something, like, important and, like, going on there. And if somebody had enough intel to figure it out, then you're making yourself a really easy target for somebody who wanted to sabotage you.
Why did they have to move in through downtown Paris?
Yeah. Yeah. Like...
Yeah, wherever they're going, I'm pretty sure the helicopter could have gotten closer and landed there.
Yeah. If nothing else, just go by helicopter.
Yeah.
And land on top of a building.
Yeah.
And then you can take him down inside the building and you never have to go... It was just... It seemed like a really... poorly thought out.
But it's set up for a cool scene.
Well, obviously. So. But it's just, you know, a very, you know, that would not be a very effective way to actually move somebody in real life.
So what was the best... Wait. I want to talk about the motorcycles more.
Okay. Yeah.
They put two motorcycles there to ride away from. And then one doesn't work. Isn't it like you clearly test a motorcycle before you put it somewhere that it actually works?
Maybe somebody was really desperate for gasoline and so they siphoned it out of his bike.
Wait, Aaron was there? Rip. Again, if you've seen him, please tell us.
They're like the old cafe racers, like and four-cylinder box. Oh, I don't know the four-cylinder, but it's like a BMW boxer they're riding on, and then it sounds like a four-cylinder sport bike.
Well,
that's making like 18,000 RPM.
I mean, the one that the girl was on.
That one didn't make that noise.
It was like a dirt bike or something. I don't know what.
She had a BMW.
Yeah, she had like an adventure bike.
Yeah, it was not the same type.
Those bikes, they're mostly like really like quiet down. Their exhaust is actually pretty good because mostly old people ride them and don't want to make a lot of noise. And then that one drives around with stock exhaust and making sport bike noises.
Well, the BMW car was pretty bad too. It was making like Subaru WRX noises. No, that's again, that's another like old person car kind of.
That was a cool car though.
No, I'm not. Yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Wilco said you didn't like the back of it. I didn't think it was that bad.
I like the car itself, but the back, it's kind of like a weird.
It's boring. Like,
kind of weird.
Yeah, but it wasn't like ugly. When you said you didn't like the back, I was expecting it to be really bad looking. Oh, and then it was just kind of like what I expected it to look like.
I noticed with BMWs, and you've probably noticed this as well, but as they've gotten older, the grille keeps getting wider and wider. Like the really old ones have like the really skinny grille like that on either side.
Yeah.
And then like the later models have wider ones. And then like the 90s and the early 2000s ones have like a little bit wider. And now they're like this big on each side. You know, their little grill thing, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, at least it looks looks better than most people's, though.
No, it looks good. I'm just saying it's funny that look up like progression of BMW grills, and you'll see they just get like bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes on. It's really funny. Also, I just want to say that Simon Pegg looks really good in this suit. All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and I don't know how accurate or inaccurate this is going to be, but this is... just what I was thinking as I was watching.
See, somebody's making a meme about it.
So in that scene with the chase in Paris, when they're in the BMW, I was wondering though, like, realistically, shouldn't their tires have popped? Because I know that, like, Dad popped one of his tires hitting a curb, and they were like in and out of streets and like up over things and like down streets that are not meant to be driven on and stuff like that. And they're just, I mean, like very hard on the car. So I was just wondering, like, I don't know how, that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but I know that like sometimes tires on cars pop for like really ridiculous reasons that, that you know, like running into a curb, that's not a sharp object that you'd be like, oh, I'd expect that to pop a tire. So I'm just wondering, like, did that, it seemed a little unrealistic to me that they'd be able to do that much aggressive driving in that car and not have some tire issues. But I think
there's a couple of factors, one of which being like not having your tires aired up really high, because if they're aired up really high, it's more likely for them to pop. Also, it's, I think it's just kind of a fluky thing, like just a weird situational thing. I mean, and it's a movie.
Well, yeah, I get that it's a movie, but we were talking about like realistically, you know, what sound should a bike make, what, you know, things like that. So I was thinking realistically, should those tires have held up that well?
It's nothing compared to like Jason Bourne and the stuff they do in those cars, like with the Fiat he has in one of those.
Okay, yeah, at least they didn't jump any cars and like, you know, have it land and like be fine. We're like, no, your suspension would be totally killed and your car would not be.
Especially on an old BMW, like what they were driving. Yeah, it'd probably get thrashed pretty good.
Break an axle when you land. I don't know, that was like my one thing that I was like, other than some of the bike stuff, but it was just like,
definitely, yeah, some of the bike
it doesn't
stuff.
didn't seem right. But I guess another complaint that I have about this movie is I didn't like how many teams of people there were, because usually in a Mission Impossible movie it's like Ethan Hunt and his group of people against whoever the bad guy is in his movie, and they're,
but that's why this one's so interesting, because you get scenes like the last scene with Alec Baldwin, where you have Ethan and Simon Pegg and Luther that are all like on one side, and then you have Alec Baldwin who's like confronting them, and then you have Walker who Alec Baldwin is kind of trusting with the dossier that he has about all the information on Ethan Hunt. Is you kind of have like three sides going there at each other, plus you have the CIA, that the lady from the CIA who's another side, and that's how you get these like cool mix-ups and stuff.
Okay, it made for one cool scene, that scene where you realize that they knew all along that it was Walker and that they were setting him up to, you know, catch him admitting to being one of the apostles. But I was thinking more specifically about a couple of things. One, more having to do with how you had like Ethan and his people, and then the White Widow and her people, and then the CIA and their people, and then the one Elsa from MI6, where you have them all kind of showing up in one thing together. And it just seemed like a little bit too much for me.
I think it meshed well.
I think I really only think it worked well in that one scene.
I don't know.
Also, I think maybe it's just because I've seen it in, it seems to happen in like every spy movie, and it seems unrealistic, and maybe it's why I don't like it, is how they always have like different spy agencies that work for the same government pitted against each other. Where I think that's dumb, where it's like you have Ethan Hunt's division is pitted against the CIA, and that doesn't make sense. Like, it seems like there'd be better communication between those departments and they'd be on the same page about things, instead of being like, well, I don't trust you, and they're all going behind each other's backs and like sending their own agents in and stuff. Like, they're treating them like they're separate governments instead of two agencies under the same government.
Like it's two kids in the backyard just throwing snowballs at each other.
Yeah, it's like, that annoys me in those. It's like, if, you know, if you did it once in a movie, it'd be fine. But it seems like every spy movie has that, where like different divisions of secret agencies within, or maybe not secret agencies, but different agencies within the same government are working against each other or don't trust each other. And that doesn't seem realistic, because I feel like in real life nothing would ever get accomplished if that was the way stuff actually was.
Not in every spy movie. It doesn't happen in like Spy Kids or something like that.
Wow.
Ah, yes, the elite spy movies.
Now, educate us about Shark Boy and Lava
Girl.
Oh,
I was just going to say that. You never saw Shark Boy and Lava Girl?
Oh, come on, dude.
Oh, man.
Shark Boy is basically like Reagan when he gets his hair wet and then like pushes it back. That's pretty much Shark Boy.
Well, it's Taylor Lautner when he was little.
I was going to look up Taylor Lautner.
I'm going to just look up Shark Boy.
Shark Boy and Lava Girl. Wasn't that the one that had George Clooney as the bad guy in one of them?
That, I have no idea.
Where he's like in the weird like helmet robot thing where you can just see his face really big.
I really don't remember that.
I can't remember if that was, maybe that was Spy Kids.
I just remember them for like one.
No, I don't know. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, Wilco, you missed out. Your childhood was just not what it could have been. I thought it was funny that they included the like running up the stairs shot. I feel like every action movie has one of those where like you get the overhead shot of the stairs of people either escaping from somebody or chasing people upstairs or something.
And then they took it even further with Benji on the computer like, why is he running in circles?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I had it in 2D.
Yeah. That's actually, I guess, kind of my complaint about this one is that most of the other Mission Impossible movies do like a really good job introducing some really cool new futuristic technology.
This one recycled.
Yeah, I mean, this one just didn't seem to have anything new that was innovative, really. Like, if you just kind of think back through all the other ones, like, they always have something. Like, the one that really sticks out to me is where they, like, it's not even something unrealistic, necessarily, but where they are breaking into some place, and so they set up the screen in the hallway, and so it looks like,
oh, yeah.
And then they're doing stuff behind the screen, but it looks like the screen is just the hallway. Like, I don't know, stuff like that. And I just didn't, it didn't seem like there was anything in this.
No, they didn't have to do anything creative.
Any gadgets. There weren't any gadgets, really.
No. Well, and not just that there weren't any gadgets, but, like, that one wasn't so much a gadget. That was just creativity.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just camera work.
Yeah. This one was more about, like, twists and turns.
Yeah,
and
this,
like,
one didn't really have any.
Setting each other up. And
yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, they just kind of recycled stuff, like the masks that they use in everything. The, you know, the trackers. Well, yeah, but it's fine. But it's also, they've been using that literally since the first Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else we need to, I mean, this is just going to be a short one then, I guess.
Oh, for sure, man. It was going to be a short one from the beginning, dude.
Well, yeah, but.
Oh, my goodness.
Is there anything else important that we need to cover? Anything that anybody really liked that you feel like you want to bring up?
I kind of got everything.
I like Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg is always the highlight for me of any movie he's ever in. He's always the highlight. He's just a great actor. I'll watch anything with Simon Pegg. I don't like it. Oh. We gotta rate this movie.
Ah, yes.
We do 1 out of 10 ratings, Wilco.
1 out of 10.
Yeah, 1 out of 10.
1 to 10, not 1 out of 10. That'd be a really low rating.
So we haven't done 1 out of 10 yet.
So yeah. 1 being it's terrible, and 10 being
just like how we grade or testing and not.
Yeah, just
sure.
Like that. That's
just
what
like
we based
that.
It on, actually.
So yeah, that's why we picked
choice.
That.
I give it a 6 minus.
What?
A 6 minus.
6 minus? So
like a 5.5?
Yeah.
No, 5.9.
Oh,
okay. Oh. Why?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just tired, I think.
It was just the first number that came.
And maybe I should have watched them, actually, all of them before watching this one.
It depends. Like, we're not judging the other movies; you're just judging this movie.
Yeah, I know. So, I know. But then I think I would get it more.
There wasn't a lot of ties other than his wife. There weren't and Elsa. There weren't many ties to the other movies. I guess, but it was it was all pretty minimal. Okay.
Either way, so it's gonna round up or down to 6. So,
oh, 6 is average. Yeah.
So does that mean?
So this is
would
an
you,
average movie.
Would you recommend it to anybody?
Would you rewatch it?
Yeah, I would rewatch it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what do you guys give it?
I'd probably go higher than a 6. I think it's one of the. I was gonna say one of the better Mission Impossibles, but. I mean, 1 and 3 are pretty good, and then I don't really remember 4 and 5, so I can't really say that with certainty. I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10 because it's I've seen it twice now, and I'd watch it again tomorrow. Like, it's an entertaining movie, so I give it a 7. It doesn't have any major flaws because, like we said, it's a Mission Impossible movie, so it kind of sticks to a formula. And as we've seen with like Mission Impossible 2, you stray away from that formula, things get real weird real quick. So,
the beach scene.
Just every scene in that movie. So bad. Well, you need to go watch Mission Impossible 2, the second one.
Hmm.
Find it somewhere and watch it.
Okay.
It's one of the worst movies in the world.
It's hilarious, though. You'll laugh a lot.
Okay.
It'll have some crazy motorcycle stunts in it. You'll enjoy that.
I will watch it in the airplane.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think I would also give it like a 7 out of 10 because it's not bad. It's, I definitely don't like it as much as I like the first Mission Impossible movie. And I would rewatch it, but I wouldn't want to watch it soon. I would want to maybe rewatch it in 6 months or something. I don't think I would want to, like, unlike you, you said you could sit down and watch it again tomorrow. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah.
I think I would need to wait a while. But I also wouldn't tell somebody not to watch it. I think
I like it more. How would you say this compares to the John Wick films?
Kind of like those.
Do you like them more or less than this one?
Kind of like them more.
Like them more?
Yeah.
I think I like this more. Because,
well, yeah. Maybe the story is a little bit better in the Mission Impossible one.
Maybe. But, like, the fact that it has one.
But how it's filmed and the quality, I think that one is the one. John Wick is way better.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both good. But the problem I have with the John Wick films is that they're very, very repetitive.
Mm.
Even if you just, like, watch the first John Wick film, it's really repetitive. It's all just, like...
His dog died.
No one cares.
Wilco cares. Look, he looks like he's gonna cry.
I don't know. It's just a bunch of shooting. Like, at least the Bourne films, like, there's other stuff going on.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's more interesting. Same with the Mission Impossible movies. I don't know. The John Wick ones, it's just a bunch of shooting to me. So, I like the first one a lot. The second one was really not very interesting. It felt like the first one rehashed. I haven't watched the third one yet, and I guess I'll get around to it at some point. But, I don't know. They're not gonna go down in history for me. So...
And I've never seen any of the John Wick films. So.
I mean, I would recommend the first one for sure.
Okay.
Definitely watch the first one.
It's alrighty.
It's a lot like a movie. It's a lot like...
It's a movie? Weird.
Come on, it's 2 o'clock. Whatever time it is. It's a lot like a Mission Impossible movie or a, you know, just... It's an action movie, you know, so...
Okay. Well, I'll do that this weekend.
Well, I think that's all. We barely pumped out an episode for the beginning of this upcoming month. Hopefully we'll get in touch with Aaron at some point.
Yeah.
This was a rough episode for sure.
But at least you all got to meet Wilco.
Oh man.
Well, I think we'll see you next year in the Netherlands.
You want us to bring all this and come record in the Netherlands?
We just do it on the phone. Like that.
Yeah, there's a lot more that goes into that than you think, but anyways, email us at limitedtoeverything@gmail.com or follow us on Facebook at L2E Podcast and
send pictures of Aaron if you see him anywhere.
Pictures of anything, not anything. Not anything. Don't say that, Wilco.
Yeah, Wilco, this is all your fault. Wait, say that into the mic.
Wait, if you're in a cave, what would you use to see Wilco?
A flashlight.
A what?
A flashlight.
Did you ever look that up?
No, I didn't.
You need to do that before you leave.
Do it right now.
No, flashlight.
No. The way you're saying it. Nate can type it in for you.
Wait, how do you... Like...
Swap the A for an E.
I like the part where he just went on incognito mode to look up flashlight. So pretty much every time you said light, that's what I hear.
Just say flashlight. No, we'll be alright. Flashlight.
Now you sound like you're choking as you're saying it.
Flashlight. Flush. Flash. Light. How?
Flash.
Flash.
Light. Flashlight.
Like ass. Flashlight.
Flashlight.
Kind of. It's closer. Right.
We're done.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
How you the toodle-a-doo? want to sponsor Light Popes, hit us up.
What?